You can wrestle with God, win and lose, have your name and nature changed all at the same time. In Genesis chapter 32, beginning at verse 22, hear the word of the Lord. And he rose that night and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. He took them, sent them over the brook, and sent over what he had. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Now, when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint, and he wrestled with him. And he said, "Let me go, for the day breaks." But he said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, "What is your name?" He said, "Jacob." And he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you've struggled with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked, saying, "Tell me your name, I pray." And he said, "Why is it that you ask about my name?" And he blessed him there. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel. "For I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved." Just as he crossed over Peniel, the sun rose up, and he limped on his hip. Jacob can be a man who's described as one who has wrestled with God all of his life. He's a man who's actually been on the run. We who are here today know something about being on the run, always trying to stay one step ahead of an assignment, a project. We know what it means to be running. It's a generation, actually, that's always on the run. How we manage our day, control our time between school, marriage, children, family, church. We know what it means to be always on the run, trying to stay one step ahead of one more project that we have to complete. Jacob was a man like that, wrestling and running all of his life. The first mentioning of him at his birth, in fact, is that he's wrestling and on the run. And after outwitting his brother, he's on the run again and running to his uncle turned father-in-law. And now when we meet him in Genesis chapter 32, he's on the run again, away from his uncle turned father-in-law, Laban, but this time he's running back to his past. The very thing that he had run away from, he is running back to. And in preparation for the meeting of his brother Esau, he sends Rachel and Leah, his two maid servants, his 11 children across the Jabbok. And for whatever reason, he crosses over, and now we meet him cold, wet, tired, exhausted, sitting by himself, and the narrator is very clear to use this word, he's alone. By himself and at Jabbok. Some say it's the lowest place on the map of this eastern tributary that connects to the Jordan. There he is, alone. But maybe not completely alone. Maybe even here he's wrestling and running with his thoughts of the past. Maybe he sees the ghosts dancing on the canvas of his conscience, thinking about those days when he had actually tricked his brother out of the birthright. And how he had manipulated the blessing from the hand of his brother. How he deceived the narrowing gaze of his father Isaac, who could not see and make a distinction, who said, "You feel like Esau, but you sound like Jacob." I don't think he had much complaint of outwitting Laban, they were just alike, made out of the same substance. And so he sits alone at the fort of Jabbok, at least with his thoughts. And while sitting there, it gives us a lesson this morning, doesn't it? That when we think that we are at the lowest place and alone, it might be that God has deliberately sent us to that place to gain and claim our attention. That's where the majority of us who make up this congregation this morning at Truett, we are there, aren't we? You feel like being here in seminary, you're all alone. It may be the place where God really wants you. It's really put you here. Not just for the completion of just theological studies, but for God to claim your entire attention so you can be alone with him. We don't like to be alone. We're a noisy group of people. The quieter things get, the more noise we seem to manufacture. On with the television, the DVD, CD, iPod, iPhone, plugs in our ears. We walk around because we don't like to be still and silent too long. Just the idea of being alone with God is enough to unnerve the most of us. Blaise Pascal, mathematician and theologian, said these words that the problems of the world, the majority of them, could be solved if we would just sit still and get silent. You can almost hear the echoing of the psalmist saying that, don't you? Be still and know that I am God. Well, that's where Jacob was, and that might be where God has forced us to be, to get still long enough to hear him, and that's always at the place of our extremity. But once you get there, know that God can meet you in a mystery. It says that Jacob was alone with his thoughts, I guess, thinking about past and how this reunion would not be a glad reunion with his brother Esau. And something happens. Without a word of warning, there's no prelude to it, a man, nameless man, out of the dark, descends upon him. And two scenes take place. The first scene is a silent scene. And in this non-verbal scene, Jacob knows who this is. It's Esau, a strong man. Esau, who's come under the stealth of night and has caught up with him. He knows who it is. But the wrestling is different than that. No, Jacob's no weakling. He has strength. That has been identified in his past and his love for Rachel, the moving of a stone. He's physically strong. He can handle his weight. This is more than a man here. Who is this man, nameless one, who's come upon him? Well, some say that it's an angel. Others say that it's the angel of Jehovah. Still others have come up and said that this is a pre-incarnate revelation of the Word of God himself. If that be the case, what kind of man is Jacob that he can hold off that kind of power? And they wrestle. It's probably the longest wrestling match in recorded history. This is no ridiculous wrestling match. This is no WWF, WWE. This is no WrestleMania. No, this is hand-to-hand combat. This is life and death struggle. This is putting grips to say, I'll take your life. And look at them wrestling. So much so that the word that is used here says they kicked up dust. Anybody who's ever been in a fight, and you start kicking up dust, you know you're in a life and death encounter. And that's what they were doing, fighting, kicking up dust, holding on to each other for a long time. Here's the length of it, till the breaking of day. And there are no words exchanged, but in every gesture, every strained muscle is to say to this Jacob, you need to get off of me now. And listen to these words. And when the man could not prevail against him, when he could not overpower him, when he couldn't conquer him, the scene begins to change. When he couldn't do it, wrestling with his left hand, he's about to do something with his right hand. He touches him. He didn't break anything in the sense of, he just touched it. And the tendon snapped and left him crippled. And you know what Jacob's doing now? He's just holding on. That's all he's doing. He's just holding on. Don't miss that, because often we rush to the end of it. He can't overpower Jacob, no word of exchange, and all he does is touch him. If this is actually a divine message and messenger of God, he doesn't have to strike him to kill him. All he has to do is touch him to bless him. God doesn't have to crush us to get our attention. He just merely touches him. And now look what Jacob is doing, holding on. You've been there before, where you've had to hold on. And they're just holding on, and then speech gives way to the silence and says, you better let me go, it's about morning time. And Jacob says these words, I will not let you go until you bless me. He's always seeking for the blessing. If you trace the life of Jacob from birth to being reared in Isaac's home, to the manipulation and the deception of his brother and father, to his run to Bethel, he's always looking for the blessing. He even negotiates with God on one occasion. If you protect me, and if you look over me, and if you shelter me, then I'll let you be my God. But he's come to the end of his road now. No more running. Let me go, for the day is breaking. And Jacob says, I will not let you go until you bless me. And in that strange encounter, Jacob holding on, it says to us there are moments where you too will have to wrestle until your blessing comes. I'll give you one example that every one of you are experiencing now or have experienced. You have to wrestle with grief until it blesses you. Wrestle with Old and New Testament until it blesses you. You get the notion. You want to let it go, but you got to stay with it until it blesses you. You don't see it now in the night, but you wrestle with it until it blesses you. I know, been there, done that. I know you're saying, what good does this really matter? Why do this? You stay with it, and then 10 years, 20 years from now, you say, I'm glad I stayed up all night wrestling until it blessed me. Let me go. The day is breaking. Well, we don't really know why this mysterious assailant in the night wants to get out of the way. It could possibly be that he wants to get out of the way so that the morning light does not reveal the identity of his mystery. We don't know. But I'll tell you one thing that we ought to take away from here. What kind of man, in the words of Walter Brueggemann, is Jacob? And what kind of God is God? That God, in this case, this nameless assailant at night, cannot overpower Jacob. But Jacob can't overpower God. God conquers Jacob. Jacob conquers God. Frightening to think, isn't it? For you to think that frail humanity can actually conquer God. I think I know what he's talking about. I have children. They're under my tutelage. I say to them, it's time to go to bed. There's no debate, discussion, negotiation, or dialogue. It's time to go to bed. As the authority of the house, let's go to bed. Dad, I don't want to go to school. Well, it's not an option. You're going to school. I don't want to eat vegetables. Eat them because they're good for you. No say in the matter. By right, I overpower them. But there are times that they have overpowered me. They come in and they'll say, Dad, and I already know the way that they say that. Dad, you remember you promised us that you would go to the park with us, Dad? And the fact of them just calling my name, they overpower me by the permission of my generosity. You see, it had to be that this nameless one waits for Jacob to submit himself to the power of the wrestling match. And at that moment, something happens. Can I give you one last thing that happens out of that? And that is, remember, Jacob is saying, let me go. And Jacob said, I won't let you go until you bless me. And names are about to be exchanged. That man asked him, he said, what's your name? He said, Jacob. He had to own up to who he was. He had to do that. And that's why many of us miss out in the whole wrestling, that we don't want to own up to who we are. He was saying more than Jacob. He was saying more than the son of Isaac. He was saying more than the husband of Rachel. He was saying more than the father of those 11 sons. He was saying more than that. He was saying, I know I've been a trickster. I've been a deceiver and a conniver. I've been a heel grabber. I've been a deceptor. He was announcing in confession, I have been all of that. And the reality is, God can't do much with us until we own up to who we are. You have to own up to who you are. But in that mystery, a final thing happens, and there's a new identity. What's your name, Jacob? He says, you know what? Your name is no longer going to be Jacob. I'm going to give you a new identity. And this is not to be confused with the identification tags of people who are maybe in athletics or in entertainment who change their name to have a screen name. You know. No, like Eddie Albert, Eddie Hamburger, you know. That kind of thing. You're not talking about that. You're talking about people, not who just changing names for screenplay. This is a new identity. No longer Jacob, but Israel. Because you have wrestled with God and men, and you prevailed. You have a new identity, a new future, and a new possibility. And it comes by the way of learning how to lose. You see, most of us, we don't want to lose. We live in a culture that tells us that we always win. Losers are looked down upon. But here you win by losing. And you lose in the winning. I'll sit down now. I came across a story. John Claypool tells this of a hermetic monk who had made his way up to Mount Altus. And a young novice wanted to enter into the Hermite monastery. He tracked down the steps and found this Hermite monk and scaled that mountain and sat in silence for hours and then broke the silence and asked the Hermite, do you still wrestle? He said, yes. He said, do you wrestle with the devil? He said, I've wrestled with him, but he's gone old and I've grown old and we don't wrestle no more. He said, well, do you wrestle with God? He said, I've wrestled with God. He said, do you win? He said, I used to want to win. Now when I wrestle with God, I want to lose. It's in the losing that we win. Jesus tells us that very thing, that unless we deny ourselves and take up our cross and follow after him, we cannot be a learner of him. Learn this morning that winning is not everything. Losing to God is. And in losing to him, he gives you new identity, new purpose, and a new future.